are thankful for your presence, and we appreciate, again, this opportunity. We earlier read together, and I appreciate the reading, from Ecclesiastes chapter 12. In that particular reading, we find memorable words. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw nigh, of which you shall say, I have no pleasure in them. I think it is right that we emphasize that first expression about remembering God in your youth. But of course, that's not what's taken up in most of this passage. It's really more an emphasis on the fact that you don't want to wait too long, because age brings its challenges. He goes on to say, before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are darkened, the clouds return after the rain, and the day when the keepers of the house tremble, and the strong men are bent, and the grinders cease because they are few, and those who look through the windows are dim. It doesn't take great imagination, I think, to figure out some of what he's saying there. The doors of the streets are shut. The sound of the grinding is low. One rises at the sound of a bird. All the daughters of song are brought low. They're afraid of what is high. Terrors are in the way. And the almond tree blossoms, and the grasshopper drags itself along because desire fails. Because the man is going to his eternal home, and the mourners go about the streets. Before the silver cord is snapped, or the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher is shattered at the fountain, or the wheel at the cistern, and dust returns to earth as it was, and the spirit to God who gave it. It is a description, I think, of getting older. I've got an aunt, it's my mother's sister, oldest sister. She's in her 90s now, but when she was, she was in her 60s. I can remember all the Wesley girls had a temper. So she was just hopping mad because the poor fellow behind the counter at Hardee's or wherever it was had given her, without asking, the senior citizen discount. And she wasn't going to be 65 for another 3 months. Oh, she was angry about that. Because why? Well, because he's calling me old. In our society, that's an insult, to call somebody old, to put them in the category of the aged, to consider someone a senior is an insult. Where did this idea come from? It does not come from God. It doesn't come from the Bible. I want today, again, I don't think of this as being a frivolous topic. I think it's a very practical subject, to talk just a moment about what the Bible says about old age. Just a little bit of what it says about that subject. This lesson has a relevance to those of us who are older. It has a relevance, I think, to those who plan to get older. It has a relevance, I believe, to those who are younger and how to treat those that are older. And I want to share a few thoughts with you along that line today, and I really want to emphasize this lesson in terms of 3 points. In the first place, I want to acknowledge the challenges that come with old age. And that's what this passage, I think, for the most part, deals with. That if you wait till you're older to make changes you ought to make, it's harder because of the challenges that you face. And that's true. Physical limitations will come. He writes in this passage about how the grinders are few. You know, your teeth don't work like they used to. How you can't see out the window like you used to. Your eyes don't work like they used to. They used to have glasses. You know, it just you just wake up one day and all the prints got smaller and blurry. You know how that is. You can't hear like you used to. You can't sleep like you used to. I heard someone make the point that it's funny how things change. When a young man in school talks about pulling an all-nighter,
he means that he stayed up all night without sleeping. When an older person talks about an all-nighter, they mean they were able to sleep through the whole night. You know how that flips around. But sleep, which at one time maybe was taken for granted, now is a luxury because you don't sleep as well or as sound. And so on. Joints hurt, back is stooped, knees hurt. My mother is 87 years old. And she's been living with us for several years. And Mom has overall relatively good health. But she hurts. I mean, it just hurts. Hands hurt, feet hurt, back hurts. We used to have a brother with us. He's passed on now. Brother Hickam was 93. And they used to pick him up to go to services. And I'd say, sometimes I used to make the mistake of asking him the question, "Well, Hickam, how you feeling good today?" And he would respond, "When you're 93, you never feel good, but I'm doing the best I can." I'm sure that's probably right. You don't ever feel good. Think about that. Think about if you live long enough. That's what I think about with my mom. I said, "I don't expect to live to 87. I don't think that's pretty extraordinary. But if I do, you can believe this, that it's going to be hard." You know, Sunday morning, roll out of bed, get on with your day, do your work, go to home, go to bed. It's not like that for some folks. Some folks, it's an effort just to sit. Hurts. And so they have to persevere through that. Of course, the other side of that is, you're going to hurt whether you're at home or here, so Mom says, "I'm going to go to church today." But my point is, it's a challenge for her. A lot more than it is for me. Not hard for me to go to church. Get an air-conditioned car, ride somewhere, and get out. But if you live long enough, on average, there'll come a time when it's hard to do just about anything. We recognize, we acknowledge that reality. Old age can bring, there are exceptions to that, you know, but it can bring pain. And timidity can be a result of that. He writes here about those who rise at the noise of a bird. They're startled easily. They can be easily intimidated by their surroundings. And if we're not careful, we get into that. I mentioned earlier, there are some people whose attitude is about attending church. They say, "Well, I'd rather go to church and feel bad than I would sit home and feel good." But that's not everybody's attitude. There's some who say, "Oh, it's raining. I don't want to go out." Because it's raining. Let rain keep us out. Because it's not 72 degrees, we're not going to go. We're not going to serve God. If we're not careful, we become timid in our approach to life. It can affect us in all kinds of ways. It can affect us even in terms of our spiritual standards. There's a passage in the book of 1 Kings, where we read about Solomon's apostasy. Solomon, 1 Kings 11, Solomon loved many foreign women together with the daughters of Pharaoh, Moab and Ammon and Edom and the Zidonians and the Hittites. And we remember his story and the sad circumstance that surrounds his apostasy. His wives turned his heart away. But you remember what verse 4 says. It came to pass when Solomon was old, his wives turned his heart away. Solomon married foreign women when he was a young man. He married the daughter of Pharaoh. He thought he could handle it. But Solomon, as he got older, got weaker. Now that doesn't happen to everybody. I know there are situations where those who are older are the only voice of sanity in the family. They're the ones trying to hold the line. They're the ones giving the warnings. They're the ones showing the examples. But it can work the other way too. To use sort of an example that maybe seems less harsh. You ever seen at the craft store, some of these flea markets or whatever, they'll have a craft item they sell called Grandma's Paddle. You ever seen that? It's a pillow on the end of a stick. You ever seen that? You know what that is symbolizing?
the idea that grandma, who used to be so hard on her kids, now her idea of spanking her kids is bumping them with a pillow. Again, there's some grandmas that hadn't lost their itch and have a pretty good sense of things. But it's sort of an example of the kind of thing that can happen. I'm not talking about going to give the kid another cookie. You know, I'm talking about excusing sin. They're involved in sinful behavior. Oh, well, let them do what? Go ahead and sin. It can happen to preachers. I met some advice that an older preacher gave me years ago when I was first trying to learn how to preach. He said, "Wesley, you need to be on guard, because when preachers get old, they get soft." Now, there are exceptions to that. I know that. You know that. I think this guy was an exception to that. But he was trying to give me a warning. You know, young preachers have their temptations too. The temptation maybe for the young man is more to go off, as we say, half cocked. He's ready to fight. He doesn't even know what he's fighting about. He doesn't know the circumstances. He's opening his mouth when he ought to be listening. There's the danger, more the tendency of the young man. And the older man, the fellow was telling me, his danger is getting in this mode of, hey, I'm going to be rocking the boat over here, because I got things going pretty good. And if we're not careful, we swallow our conviction. That can happen to any of us. So that lessening of the standard is also a danger there that we may have to deal with. And I think sometimes just plain old bitterness can be a problem. He writes in this passage in our text about, vanity, all is vanity. That's the way it seems. I have no pleasure in them. It's all meaningless. Life can become bitter if we're not careful. Again, when I was first trying to learn how to preach, I was associated with the congregation, and they had an older man who was preaching there as well. And so I got to meet some, of course, new folks when I went to this congregation. And one of the fellows that I met was an older man that we'll call Lawrence. That was his first name. I didn't call him Lawrence. I called him Brother So-and-so. But Lawrence. And it was not well with Lawrence. He seemed to be in pretty good health physically. He got around. He didn't have to use a walking stick, much less a wheelchair. He could still drive a car. He had an apartment, a place to live, but it was never well with him. I don't think you ever asked him how he was doing, but it was anything but negative. And then breakfast. And you'd go to visit him, and he would talk about not just problems that he was having now, but problems that he had 40 years ago and 30 years ago, and all the folks that let him down, and all the folks that didn't do right, and all the ways he had suffered. Well, all of us need sometimes to be heard. I get that. And all of us at times need to share our problems. Sometimes we have a real problem we need help. But it just seemed like it was a chronic problem with him, of just never being happy, and always looking at things in a negative way, and always seeing himself as a victim. He would tell me, "Nobody comes to see me when I was there." And it wasn't uncommon for me when I was leaving, somebody else would be coming in. But I really think, and if the Lord did the judge, I think he felt sorry for us. And he had let himself. He did live by himself, and so I think when nobody else was there, he had let his mind dwell on everything negative, and it just consumed him to the point that when anybody did come, he just exploded. Because that's what he had been dwelling on. And I was young, and I certainly was not very wise, but I could see that's a problem. I think that affects our relationship with God. How can we help a brother like that? How can I, at 20-something years old, help this guy? Didn't have a clue. But one time, I was visiting there, and another brother was with me, and he was 30 or 40 years my senior. So we sat down, and as was customary, Lawrence
began to speak, and he began to talk just as soon as we came in about something that just was bothering him and he was angry about. May have been something again that happened 30 years ago. And right in the middle of a sentence, the brother that was with me said, "Lars, I'm okay." He said, "What? I'm okay. You didn't ask me. I thought I'd tell you. I'm okay. My family's okay. My wife is sick." She said, "I suppose you might want to know." Well, of course, he hadn't dreamed about asking the man. You understand? Never crossed his mind. He had no room for it in there. You know, it was full. And it apparently struck a nerve with him. I couldn't have got away with that, I don't think. I would have thought of it. But when we were through, I knew it made an effect, because the next time we went over there, the first question out of his mouth was, "How's your family?" I said, "The guy had a good idea. Wasn't going to win the war, but just he laid one brick in." The point is, a young person can be self-absorbed. And as we get older, maybe we got more troubles to have to work with. But we've got to make up our mind, we're not going to surrender. We're not going to give in to that bitterness that can be such a challenge. But let me say this, old age is not just about challenge. It's not just about bad news and struggle. There are a lot of privileges that come with old age that I believe the Bible emphasizes likewise. You know, one of the great things about getting older is that you have the privilege of being a witness to the providence of God. There's a passage in the Psalms that we refer to from time to time, and I think rightly so. And we ought not to miss the overall point of this passage. In Psalm 37 and in verse 25, the psalmist writes, "I have been young and now I am old. Yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his seed begging bread. He is ever merciful and lendeth, and his seed is blessed." It's a point well made that God will take care of his own. But I think it's a point even better made when the psalmist says, "I have lived long enough to see it happen." Talking with Miss Amanda, I think it was yesterday, about Lynn Hedrick. Some of you guys may have met Brother Hedrick. He's passed on now, but I thought he was a giant. I thought he was a great man. And Brother Hedrick came where we were in a meeting one time, and late in his life, and he was talking about 2 Corinthians 9, about the principle that's found there concerning giving. And he read with us that passage in 2 Corinthians 9 about the need that Christians have and the privilege that they have to give and to give generously to the cause of the Lord. "Each one as he's purposed in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver. God is able to make all grace abound toward you, so that you, having all sufficiency in all things, may have an abundance for every good work." I think that really is the same point the psalmist made. And he goes on to quote the psalm. But Hedrick said he had lived that. That he and his wife, when they were a young couple, made up their mind a percentage of their income that they considered generous, that they were going to give. And of course, through the years, his income went up, and so his giving went up. But he stuck with that percentage. He said also there were times when it was really hard. Especially when they were a young couple, and they had this generous goal in mind, and there were days and weeks and months when it looked like they didn't know where the money was going to come from. But he said they made together the determination they were going to give to God first and trust Him for the rest of it. And he was telling us, those of us who were younger, he was saying, "You know what we found? We found that we always got by. Somehow, some way, we got by." It means a lot to me to read these verses, and it means a lot to me to hear those who have lived long enough to be able to say, "I know God's providence is real because it is worked." for me, and it will work for you.
That's one of the blessings, I think, of getting older, is that you can be a witness for the providence of God. Of course, there's some people who live, 90 years and don't see anything because they have their eyes closed. That's a sad reality. But it doesn't have to be that way. It can be better.
Another thing about age is it really gives us the opportunity to develop wisdom and knowledge.
There's a passage over in the book of Job in the 15th chapter in which we find these words. There's a discussion going on here. And in verse 9, one fellow stands up and says, "What do you understand that is not in us? With us," verse 10, "are the gray-headed and very aged men, much elder than thy father." What the man is saying is that our point of view ought to be considered because those with us are gray-headed. They are aged. That is, those with us are those who, because of their age and experience and wisdom, ought to be on the right track.
Ought to be.
That just makes sense, doesn't it? You take two good people. One of them has been a Christian for 40 years and the other one for 40 days. I think God loves both those people. I think both of them have a place in the kingdom. But which one would you expect to be able to surpass in knowledge and wisdom? Obviously, the one who has spent the time. How many times do you suppose you take this aged sister in Christ? I had that experience when I first started preaching. There was an older lady there, a widow lady, in the congregation where I was, and it didn't take me long to figure out that I might have been up there preaching, but she had been reading that Bible a lot longer than I had. And, you could talk to her about Josephus and Jewish history and so on, and this lady had been spending time reading and studying the Scriptures and the history of the Bible. And, I learned in a hurry to appreciate and to respect her. Well, it takes a fellow a while to catch up. Maybe preaching, but he's 20-something years old, 23, 22 years old. Here's this sister over here who's been through the Bible. She'd been through the Bible 10 times before he was born. Yeah. That's a blessing that comes with it. You don't get that instantly. You don't take the pill and suddenly you're wise and knowledgeable. You have to take the time. Of course, the point is that there are some who don't take that time. God said, "I'm looking for elders." He didn't say, "I want the youngers. I want the elders to lead and rule." Well, the sad reality is that some, despite the fact that they're older, may not be qualified, not to be an elder, but just not be Bible students. This passage that we read from Job 15, you might have occurred to you that that's Eliphaz who said that. And let me tell you, the gray-headed folks, whoever they were with him, if they were opposing Job, they were right. But it ought to be, if we use our time wisely, that God gives us, that through the years we'll grow in wisdom and knowledge and thank God for it. The example and the counsel of older and wiser brethren.
It ought to bring age that is respect. A respect from others.
That was a precept certainly of the law. If you look back in Leviticus 29 and verse 32, I'm trying to say. The law of Moses reminds us to rise up before the hoary head and honor the face of the old man and fear the Lord. I am the Lord. That's not just an Old Testament precept, by the way, but it is there in the Scriptures. It's also found, I think, in the New Testament in one form or another. If you look back in the book of 1 Timothy, chapter 2, or chapter 5, I should say, in verse 2. 1 Timothy chapter 5, Paul writes, "Do not rebuke an older man, but exhort him as a father, and the younger as brothers, and the older women as mothers." What he's telling us there is that those who are younger ought to respect those who are older.
You don't just talk to an older brother or an older sister any way. I don't care if they're wrong. You talk to them like you talk to your father, like you talk to your mother. That may have lost its sting with some folks, the way they talk to their father and mother. Call them by their first, "Hey, Charlie, don't you shut up, let me talk." Talking to your daddy? Surely not. You know, in our society, it tends to be more that way. I always think of an example. I don't know Cardiso Camp very well. He came to hold a meeting where we were years ago. But he was very gracious during that week. And he told me and related a story to me about something that happened to him that stuck in my mind. He and his family did a lot of work over in West Africa. And I think this story took place in Nigeria. It seemed like it was. He was out teaching on this occasion out in the rural area, as he often did. And the setting is that he's there and people are just sitting on the ground around him, sort of almost encircling him. And he taught for a while, an hour, whatever it was, and then there was going to be a question period. So he's teaching, and then he gets through and the questions come, and there's one young man sitting over here, and he's got a question. So the deacon kept answering his question. He had another question. So he answered his question. He had another question. So Brother Deacon Camp said, "Okay, I'm going to answer this question. And then I'm going to let some other folks have a chance to ask some questions, okay?" So he answered his question. Then he had another question. While Brother Deacon Camp sort of making up his mind how he's going to handle that, he notices out of the corner of his eye an older man sitting right over here who gets up and makes his way between these people and comes over where that young man was. And he said, "You have shamed us." Well, the Deacon Camp was just sort of looking at him. That young man bristled. But he just stood there separate. So after the thing was over, he asked him somebody, a brother there. He said, "I didn't know what was going to happen." He said, "I thought that young man was going to hit him." He said, "Oh, no. No," he said, "he would never have struck that older man." He said, "They'd have killed him if he had struck that older man." I'm advocating violence. I want you to understand that. But I just found that interesting. Now, it was just unthinkable that a young man would answer back, much less strike an older man. Sometimes, you know, we think our culture, we're so superior. Man, we've got so much to learn. They had it right. Learning respect for those who are older. You don't have a young person sitting in a chair and an older person needing a place to sit. You don't have them happen. You don't have young people who interrupt and are rude to those who are older. I mean, young folks have to be taught. But we're teaching them that there's a certain way you treat those who are older, and you learn respect, and you show respect. It's one of the privileges of old age that we recognize that that's a God-given principle. And it ought to be taught. It ought to be put into practice. You know, there's another thing, a privilege that comes with old age, and that is, I think, the joy of family, for lack of a better term. It is a blessing. There's a passage in Proverbs 17 in verse 6 that reads, "Children's children are a crown to the aged, and parents are the pride of their children." Children's children are a crown. There are a lot of folks I know that may apply to. I got a guy particularly I think about when I read that verse. You guys don't know Wayne Teal, but you'd like him. He's a great guy. He and his wife, brethren that we've worked with in the past. Wayne, he lives out on a farm in West Virginia in a barn that he built himself. He loves nothing better than to get his clan together. He's got four children, all of whom obeyed the gospel. They marry Christians. And he's got, I don't know how many, I saw the grandchildren now. One of them, whom married one of my daughters. back married to Laurie that's here today. But this group that gets together, all of them love the Lord. I mean, the Lord is the judge of the heart. I don't know. But from out there, it seems like he's just batting 1,000 right now. And I think about that. I think, you know, the smile on his face when he looks over this crew, you can't buy that for $1 million. You can't buy it with money at all. It's worth more than gold. What a blessing it is. Now, I know I've been blessed. We know the joy that you feel in seeing your first child obey the gospel. But I don't know yet what it's like to see your first grandchild obey the gospel. You've got to live a little longer to get that privilege. I know sometimes it doesn't work that way. I remember also the Proverbs tell me that the father of a fool has no joy. I know sometimes our children, our grandchildren do let us down. And I'm not denying that pain. I'm saying it doesn't have to be that way. But regardless of whether our family is a joy or sometimes a grief to us, there's still a privilege in old age, because one thing we know is that we control ourselves. And one thing we know is that every day we live, we're one step closer to home. I hope I'm not abusing the context of Romans 13 when I make that point. In verse 11, Paul writes, "We know the time. It is now high time to awake out of sleep. Now is our salvation nearer than when we first believed. The night is far spent. The day is at hand. Therefore, let us cast off the works of darkness and put on the armor of light. Let us walk properly as in the day, not in this revelry and drunkenness and so on. Put on the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, he says, is our salvation nearer than when we first believed." Every day you get up, every day you think about that. Now is our salvation nearer than when we first believed. Can't let go now. This is not the time to let off the gas. This is the time to go. That brings me to the final point I want to make. And that is that old age is a time of challenges, but a time of blessings as well, and a time always of responsibility. There is that retirement mentality. You know, a fellow does work hard, maybe at his job, and he looks forward to retirement, and he gets to that point. Well, you know, I don't begrudge a fellow taking a vacation. Sometimes you hear people say things like, I heard one guy say, "What are you going to do with your retirement?" His answer was, "I am going to buy me a rocking chair and put it on my front porch, and I'm going to sit in it." And he said, "If I work up some ambition, I might rock." He said, "That's what I plan to do. I'm tired." Okay, I get that. But if that's the whole plan, then that's the problem. You do hear this almost selfishness. What are you going to do now that you have more free time? Well, we're going to travel, and we're going to do this, and we're going to visit here. Okay, why don't we take a vacation? But where is the Lord in the picture? I don't know this particular brother, but I heard of a brother who had a good job, and he had income. So he had an advantage there that some don't have. But when he was loose from his daily responsibilities with that job and retired, what he did was, he said, "I'm going to go to school and brush up on my Spanish, and I'm going to South America and work with some of those small churches down there and try to be a good influence." When I heard that, I thought, now that's a different retirement. Now, everybody can't do that. Anybody could not do that. What I admire about the brother is that he had the idea that if I've got more time, that means I can serve the Lord more. And that's what I need to catch, is the idea that my time is ultimately not mine. It's a gift of God, and I owe it. And I'm not going to be selfish with it. We've heard this illustration before. You ask a young man, you say, "What's your plan?" "I plan to go to school." "What then?" "Well, I'm going to finish." "Well, what then?" "Well, I'm going to get a good job." "What then?" Well, I'd like to have a family. What then?
Well, I want to raise my family.
Well, what then? Well, I hope, I guess, to retire.
Well, what then?
Well, I hope to travel or do whatever.
Well, what then?
Well, I guess I'll die.
Well, what then?
Never quite had time for God in this picture. Always busy with this or that or something else. But if he's not the center of it, we've missed the whole point.
And the Psalm, the 71st Psalm, I'm sure we've read this before.
Oh God, thou hast taught me from my youth.
Hitherto have I declared thy wondrous works, and now also when I am old and gray-headed, O God, forsake me not, until I have showed thy strength unto this generation, and thy power to everyone that is to come. We need older Christians who will stand up and be counted. If they're never shepherds over the church, be that as it may, we need older Christians whose godly example and faithfulness will be there to show those who are younger how to do it. I knew a brother who lived a long life and had some health problems through his life. And he made a statement, I'm paraphrasing, but somewhere along this line, that he felt like his role at this point in time, limited as he was, he said, I think now it's my job to show people how to die. In faith. He said, that's my job now. Well, I hope that I can keep that, find that attitude and keep it. The psalmist said, just let me use what time I have to show this generation why you ought to serve God. Titus 2, let the aged men, not just the elders, not just the shepherds, but the aged men, be sober and grave and temperate and sound in the faith and charity and in patience. And let those aged women be in behavior as becomes holiness, not false accusers or given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they may teach the young women to love their husbands and love their children, to be discreet and chaste, pure, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. So, you listen very patiently. Let me close with these two points. What do we say about old age? What do we say about it? Is it good or bad? Is it time for strengthening or weakening? Curse or a blessing? Well, you know what the true answer to that is. It's what you make of it. It's exactly what we make of it. The gray head is a crown of glory if it is seen in the way of righteousness. Do not know if we're going to have old age. It's not a promise. But if we reach that point, let's determine to use it to God's glory, and let's use the time right now and every day till that point to prepare and to make it so. Thank you again for your kind attention. If you're here this morning, you're not serving God, don't waste another minute outside His service. Be baptized into Christ and put on Christ. If you're here as one who has a child of God, needs to make correction of some matter in your life, make it right with Him. And if we can help you, let us do that right now. If we stand and sing, will you please come?